Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work. This is a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it's hosted by me, Kyle Schoenewill, and my friend, Robbie Earle. Robbie, are you emotionally ready for today?
How could I be? Really? I mean, I could say yes to you, but then I would be lying.
Holy smokes.
What an episode.
This episode, yeah, it's going to go on a short list for me of most emotional moments in the MCU. We'd have to make a list again. But I was legitimately tearing up. I felt Mark and Steven's pain so much. I mean, it took a crazy turn, honestly. We probably guessed it was coming out of some kind of trauma. But this was a really sad, dark thing, especially as a new dad. It was really sad and very Shutter Island-esque, you know what I mean? Where it's like, it's a really trippy thing and there's a huge twist last episode, but then the ultimate thing ends up being just such a sad thing.
Man, it's funny. I feel like the Disney Plus trend has been really kind of mind-blowing episode fours and gut-wrenching episode fives. And I'm very okay with that because I feel like that's sort of in keeping with, you know, like I think we've always said that that's something that Marvel does well, that we wanted to see them continue to do well. Like, you don't have to do one or the other. You can do emotionally complex, inventive stories alongside compelling, mind-bending action thrillers. And that's, I mean, I think Moon Knight is showing that maybe as much as anything, because there are parts of Moon Knight, parts of even this episode, that were still funny, like little moments, not a ton, but little ones. Like, and I don't think that those took away from the gravity of the story as a whole that was being told there, but like...
No, it adds to it. That's the thing.
Because it adds the human element kind of even further. Right.
This has been the perfect balance of that, for sure, to me. The humor has never felt like a forced joke here or there.
No, exactly. Because I think people's complaints, whether we agree with them or not, I think generally focus on that. Like, is Marvel unwilling to sit in a heavy moment? And
which I disagree with, but yes, that's what people say. Yep.
Yeah, and I disagree with as well. And I think that WandaVision Episode 8, which is obviously, you know, people are quickly drawing comparisons between that and this.
And rightfully.
For sure. Yeah. And both of those, I think, show that to be true. Man, like, and what I love is how different those are, both in presentation. I mean, yes, they're both like magical walkbacks through the past, but in a different way, a very different character, a very different kind of trauma. Man, and I'll just say this episode makes me realize why Oscar Isaac has been so invested in this role.
I'm glad you phrased it that way and didn't just say this is why Oscar Isaac is so good, because that's obvious and he has been amazing and he's killing this role. But he gets to shine in such a unique way. When he says character study, like these last two episodes, but specifically this episode, is what he meant. This is his chance to shine a light on something that is pretty different for us. And yeah. I know a few people have brought up that it's a bummer there hasn't been as much suit time, but to me, this feels a lot like the last season of Lost, where mm-hmm. the critique was, we're not getting these answers, we're not getting enough of this, we're not getting enough of this. And really what the writers were trying to say is, all of those other things are peripheral. Like, we'll give you answers and it's fun and it's cool, but really what you care about are these characters and their relationships. And that's kind of how I feel here, where it's like, yeah, we're getting answers and all that stuff's really cool. And I want to know what happens with Amit and the tomb and all of that stuff and Moon Knight. And I want to eventually see more of Moon Knight in his suit if we get him in other things and whatnot. Don't get me wrong. I do want to see all that. But all of that feels peripheral to this character and this case study. And they did that so well, to me.
I totally agree. And I think that Daredevil is a great example of that. Where, and granted, this is more extreme in some ways, because like you could consider the black that Daredevil wears in season one to be his Daredevil suit, and that does show up in the comics. But still, I feel like there's something to be said for taking a while to kind of really introduce a character. And I think we would all be happier to take that time to get to know this person rather than just like have more minutes of him beating up jackals, which are cool minutes. But I also feel like the fact that those moments have been few and far between make them feel kind of more epic.
Absolutely, because it's very WandaVision-esque in a lot of ways. But if we get this much time with his trauma, his past, his grief, just like we had with Wanda, it makes him overcoming that, embracing it, whatever they do with it, it makes it that much more powerful when he finally embraces that side of it. And we'll get some like really dope Moon Knight suit shots. I believe that at some point, maybe not in this series, but it's going to make those even that much cooler because we put in the time now, in my opinion.
Well, and it's funny how the Disney, I mean, talking about Disney Plus trends, that's been one as well, like the final suit up moment. And granted, here we did see Moon Knight like early on, but I wonder if we're going to have some version of that when he gets the suit back, if it's going to be slightly different, if it's going to be kind of informed by the embrace. Because it's like, you know, WandaVision, Falcon Winter Soldier, Hawkeye.
That's what I mean. Oh, yes.
But I like that. You know, like, I think it's worth talking about, because that's kind of what these Disney Plus shows should be, I think, right? Like, I think that that's a good space to do character work, to do character studies. And then, yeah, in a Moon Knight movie, you're going to want a good amount of Moon Knight in the costume, I think. But I kind of like this, like WandaVision. Like I think in Doctor Strange, we're going to get all kinds of Wanda doing Scarlet Witch stuff in the Scarlet Witch costume. But I like that WandaVision was building to that. I'm sure in the new Captain America movie, we're going to get all sorts of stuff with Sam and on, you know?
That's what I mean, though. When Wanda does something absurd in her suit and her power is extreme and all that, we're going to be like, oh, yeah, I'm thankful I put in that time in WandaVision. It makes more sense now. Today is wild, Robbie, because obviously we're going to get into that episode fully here in a minute or two. So, I'll give you a few minutes to get your mind right, to get back into a headspace. But there's a ton going on. In a lot of ways, I think this is the kickoff of our Moon Knight / Doctor Strange mega week starting today.
Wow. Yeah, true.
Because we have a lot to tell you, and it's actually all amazing. So I'm going to get out of that sad headspace for 1 second to tell you a bunch of really awesome things, and then we'll get back into that emotional roller coaster here on today's episode.
Yeah, don't you be too happy. Don't do it.
Today is massive. I'm really excited to share this. And this may not be as big of a deal to our listeners. Well, I know it won't be as big of a deal to our listeners, but I just wanted to say thank you to everybody out there, because we have officially crossed the 1 million listens mark. we have had over 1 million plays on our episodes.
That is truly insane.
Think about that. I know it's just a number, but to us, it's more than a number, right? I mean, that's really cool. This is something that Robbie and I started in a cave with a box of scraps. And to think that we are at a point now where over a million times it's been listened to is just, I can't even really fathom it, honestly.
When we started this podcast,
it's unbelievable.
I really thought my fear was that we were going to have like our first episode was going to have like single digits of listeners. That was like my secret fear in my heart, where I was like, this is just going to like go out there and just like crickets.
Dude, we put out that first one and I remember distinctly 300 people listened to it and downloaded it. And we were stoked. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
We were like, oh, my goodness. I can't believe 300 of our friends and family found this from social media or whatever. Like, I truly thought like 10 or 15 people would do it.
Right. There are the mega podcasters out there with the big brand names behind them, and everybody knows who they are. And they have millions more plays than we do, Kyle. But you know what they don't have that we do have? The best listeners in all of podcastdom. And I mean that. I'm not even just saying that. We actually do. We were talking about this. We saw each other in Nashville this past week and got to grab lunch with Candace and Annika, which was super fun because we haven't gotten to do that in literally 7 years, I think, all four of us together.
With all four of us, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were just talking about that. It's like, it's not something that we just say on the show. Like, we are so grateful for how fun y'all make this, because otherwise, like, this would not, this would be a lot of work, if it weren't fun to interact with y'all the way that it is. But instead, it takes a lot of time, but it never feels like work.
Amen. On that note, by the way, you'll need to share, maybe in a different episode, your marathon stories.
Oh my gosh.
Robbie ran a marathon, yeah. Everybody, in Nashville. That's why he was here. Candace did too.
She did. And yes. Marathon number 3 under the belt.
It was eventful, to say the least.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I was just telling you earlier, it's been such a funny week of like a series of unfortunate but hilarious events. Next time we have some time,
we'll get into it later, but let's just say it includes lost rental car keys during the marathon.
Yep.
To the point where you ran like a marathon and a half.
definitely for 30 plus, which is fun. Also, by the way, shout out to Nick Leach.
Oh my gosh, Nick Leach, one of our listeners, the coolest listener. He found Robbie on the marathon trail.
Incredible.
With how many people ran the marathon? Tens of thousands, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and he had come to Nashville to run. Because I asked him if he was living in Nashville. So we had both kind of converged there. I didn't see him after the race. I assume he finished and hopefully did not lose his rental car keys. But yeah, that was so fun. I also, Kyle, we determined finally, conclusively, that the MCU disguise does not work.
Yeah.
Because
you had sunglasses and a hat on. Right?
With a hat and sunglasses. And Nick still spotted me. So debunked.
You know,
I'm sorry, Russos.
It's a problem we debunked. Have, right? You know, everyone's recognizing us everywhere in public. It's just, it's getting exhausting.
I know. We're going to have to go like the Michael Jordan route, get our like old lady costumes. That's a reference that so few of our listeners will get, because you have to have been watching sports in the 90s to know talking about.
I don't even know if I know what you're talking about, and I'm the biggest sports fan in the world. So am I missing?
Well, it was like mostly a joke, but there was a period where Michael Jordan would like, he was obviously like the most famous person in the world for a while, and he would like use all these elaborate costumes to not be recognized, and they got like so ridiculously elaborate that it was like he was dressing up as like an old lady and like using like prosthetics and stuff.
At one point, I thought you were maybe thinking of Dennis Rodman.
No, that's a whole different conversation.
Yeah, so you're actually beyond me. You're a step. Wow. A sports reference that I don't understand and you
wow.
do.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
This is a milestone in more ways than one.
Exactly. Speaking of that, another milestone, Apple Podcasts, shout out Apple Podcasts, featured
yes.
us on one of their playlists on their front page. So if you go to Apple Podcasts and you go to the browse page and you scroll over to their curation part, they have a popped playlist and our episode is featured in there, along with a bunch of other amazing episodes covering pop culture. So A, we're honored. B, shout out Apple Podcasts. And C, in a fun way here, you ready for this, Robbie? We have four more Cinemark gift cards
yes.
of $50 to give away to anybody who finds our feature on Apple Podcasts under the popped playlist, the curation section, popped, and you take a screenshot and you send it to us, you'll be entered to win a $50 gift card to Cinemark.
Man, this is a fun episode.
What a
we
treat.
Got all kinds of stuff going on.
I know. So I didn't plan this very well to have all this fun news the day the episode is incredibly sad.
I know.
So again, send us a screenshot of you checking out that curation via Apple Podcasts under the popped section, and you'll be entered to win one of these $50 gift cards to Cinemark. And with that $50 gift card, you can check out their new XD theaters. It's super, super dope and actually something that's near and dear to my heart because I figure, Robbie, when I go to the theater, Annika knows this and she hates me for it, but I'm crazy sensitive about the sound when I'm there
mm-hmm.
to where like I'll sit in the back and I've even a couple times asked the theater to turn it up. And I'm sensitive when there's not enough sub and I'm sensitive when the dialogue's too quiet or it's too thin or like I'm not feeling the impact. And Cinemark's XD theater makes sure that is not the problem. And that's why I love doing these kind of theaters because you're going to get a better sound and you're going to get a better picture. And so check out Cinemark's XD theaters. They have the largest screening in the building. It's wall-to-wall, custom sound. And if you're going to go to the theater anyways, you might as well upgrade your theater experience with the best theater experience you can have. Experience Doctor Strange or Thor Love and Thunder in the best Cinemark XD theater. So check that out. Enter to win one of those four $50 gift cards. A lot of fun things today, Rob. Woo!
Speaking of fun things, before we get back into sorrow and trauma and parental rejection, let's talk a little bit about some of the other fun stuff that's been happening this week, both within friends from work and just in general, within kind of MCU and pop culture news here. So first off, I want to give a shout out to, as always, FFW Batman Greg for keeping us on our toes here and keeping us informed, because he was helping collect some of this and the craziness of the last week. But first off, I wanted to say that, yes, we do have Doctor Strange coming in. We will be seeing it in less than a week, which is crazy. The world premiere is on Monday, and the screeners are also on Monday. This is kind of unique in that way, Kyle, and people may not know that. Like, normally, the premiere happens like a day or two earlier, and then the screener, and both of those things normally happen like a good
2 weeks
yeah,
in advance or something.
Yeah, like, I mean, and it's differed per movie. Like, No Way Home was a little bit tighter of a window as well. But like Black Widow, yeah, I think was like 10 days to 2 weeks or something like that. And this is, I mean, it's crazy because this is literally nobody is seeing the full movie until Monday. And that's when everybody's seeing it. So, I mean, they are on spoiler lockdown with this thing, which we love. But so
I can't believe it's Monday. Oh,
man,
my goodness gracious.
I know. So a couple things that I wanted to bring up about that, and these are sort of related, I guess. One, we got confirmation this past Monday, finally, that the Illuminati are going to appear in some form in this movie. And we got that confirmation via a promo TV spot that released where Baron Mordo shows up and says to presumably Doctor Strange, the Illuminati will see you now. I say presumably because, you know, Marvel gets clever with their editing and whatever. But so, yeah, we all thought that was going to happen ever since the Super Bowl trailer, but we had no firm confirmation. And now we do. So I just wanted to take a second to talk about that because I realized that a lot of people have probably heard this thrown around. We've probably thrown it around here and there, and they may not actually know what the Illuminati, what that even means within the Marvel Universe context.
I don't even really know what it means.
Which is very fair because, you know, like we know that, like, for instance, Jay-Z and Beyonce are in the real Illuminati. But
right, that's what I was thinking. Yep.
Right, but they're not in the Marvel Illuminati. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about that real quick. The Illuminati is something that
To be fair, Beyonce is one of the few celebrities that does get a shout out in a Marvel film.
Oh, true.
And it's from Doctor Strange. Wow, so maybe it's the same Illuminati.
True.
Entire time.
So maybe he's just introducing them to Jay-Z and Beyonce. Wow.
Can you imagine?
Probably like the floating head of Walt Disney or something.
It's like Professor X and Jay-Z.
That would be incredible. Okay. So the Illuminati within Marvel was introduced by Brian Michael Bendis in, I think, 2006 in his New Avengers run in an issue called New Avengers Illuminati. It's a really fun, Bendis was on fire during this period. People have heard me talk about that. He was kind of running the Marvel Universe for a while. And this was like a really, really great idea that Jonathan Hickman would later really run with and do even like bigger, more interesting things with. But Bendis should get full credit for coming up with this. His idea was that all of the smartest, sort of most powerful people, but more like representative of each like section of the Marvel Universe, had come together like decades ago, back in kind of the infancy of the Marvel Universe timeline wise, after I think like the Kree-Skrull War, which we won't get into now because we don't need to, and had decided, hey, we are like the most qualified people to make sure that something like this doesn't happen again. Like, we came too close to planetary extinction. We are powerful enough and smart enough to where we should be able to prevent something like that from ever happening again without people even necessarily knowing that we're doing any of that. So it's like, we're going to operate behind the scenes, pull whatever strings we have to pull, operate in the shadows. In some ways, like, that means operating in like morally gray areas and doing things that like a quote unquote hero, like your Captain America or Spider-Man, wouldn't be comfortable doing. And we're going to do all of this to kind of protect Earth from things it doesn't even know it needs protection from. That was the idea. And it winds up being really fun to read that series because Bendis weaves it in and out through like all of the Marvel timeline and shows you these times when they were doing things behind the scenes, and leads it all the way up to Civil War, which was the event that was kind of on the verge of happening in the comics at that time. So in the comics, the members of the Illuminati were Doctor Strange, Iron Man, Professor X, Namor, the Submariner, who is supposed to appear in the new Black Panther movie, which there was footage of, I believe, shown at CinemaCon today as we're recording. So that's also kind of crazy. Black Bolt, the King of the Inhumans, the famously failed Marvel project that Kevin Feige refuses to acknowledge the existence of now. And who am I forgetting? Reed Richards, of course. It was maybe like the leader of the whole thing in some ways. Mr. Fantastic. So that's the group that we have in the comics. I think what's interesting, you know, is obviously a lot of those characters don't even exist in the MCU. So what I think a lot of people are going to be wondering, and what I'm wondering, is will those characters be introduced, will some of them, in this film? will they be instead just replaced with people from the MCU? Or will we instead get like multiversal versions? Like, for instance, we have two versions of Reed Richards that have appeared in film. We have Professor X that we already know is Patrick Stewart that's appeared in the X-Men universe. Are we going to get more of that? Are we going to get like a stand-in for Tony Stark? What do you think? Not from a comics perspective, but just from, you know, Kyle, the Marvel movie lover, what is your best prediction as to how this film will handle putting together an Illuminati?
I have no idea. Everything you just said is mostly news to me. I don't think they'll do Iron Man. I don't think they'll do a variant Iron Man.
So you don't think Tom Cruise is showing up?
I don't.
We should also explain, by the way, I don't know if you've said that before. Tom Cruise was originally in the running for Tony Stark way, way back before Robert Downey Jr. was cast. That's why that rumor's been going around.
Yeah, sure.
Continue.
I know that part. I don't think that the Illuminati are going to be the central focus of the film. So I say that because I don't think they're going to fully develop all the characters we see there. So I could very easily see it being a thing where most of those people you mentioned, including Namor, et cetera, are on the panel, but we don't really dive into it until they make their appearance in later films. And then you'll come back to, oh yeah, I remember seeing them in Doctor Strange. You know what I mean? So you might just get a cameo of somebody like Namor, nothing more. But then like 2 years from now, when Namor is in some movie or some show or something.
Or in Black Panther.
They'll reference that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They'll reference that scene.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. I think that's probably right. I mean, I bet we get at least one more multiversal.
Do you think Professor X will be the Professor X we know? Like, do you think he's going to get up there and say, like, I know Logan and I know Storm and it's the exact same Professor X with the same canon as the old movies? Yes or no?
No. Well, okay. I think it's
so it's just the same actor playing the same character, but we're starting fresh.
I think it's going to be a... I think it won't be confirmed one way or the other. That's my guess. Because it would take too much work. You know, to show that it is. And I think it'll be the kind of thing where like he's, for all intents and purposes, I think it'll be the same character, but I don't think that there will be any indication of like, is this the one from Logan? Is this the one from the original trilogy or the one from like the post Days of Future Past change timeline? Like, I think they know that that's all like toxic sludge and will just be like, hey, you guys know Patrick Stewart's Professor X. Here's Patrick Stewart's Professor X.
One last thought/question on that, and then I'll let you give me a prediction about the Illuminati. Isn't it interesting that A, they're confirming that already, and B, they're showing that in TV spots? Like, I feel like so often the TV spots in the trailers just take place in the first 20 minutes of the film. And if that's something they're revealing to us, I'm wondering why. And then I'm wondering, is the Illuminati not a huge role in the film? Because I'm just wondering, why would they show it to us if it was? That's obviously not the big twist.
I mean, you know where I stand on that stuff and that, like, I would love for that to be the case.
Well, and let me add that we got an invitation to attend that screening of just the footage. We didn't make it work because we would have had to go to LA just for 15 minutes of footage. But they're being so secure about these spoilers.
Right.
And yet they're showing that in the trailer. So I just wonder if that's part of the footage they showed, but it's just not that big of a role. I don't know. Or like, what do you think? Do you think there's any other twist on the original cast of the Illuminati that you just read or something like that?
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't think it's going to be a huge part. There are kind of two ways I could see this going. And this will sort of lead into the next thing I was going to say before we move out of Doctor Strangeland. I could see it either being a stand-in for another idea that Jonathan Hickman came up with that Rick and Morty has actually kind of run with, which, you know, is the Michael Waldron connect there. of the Council of Reeds that...
Oh, we've talked about that.
Right. Which is like all the different Reed Richards meeting because they are the smartest people in all their universes and they come together and kind of like work throughout the multiverse. There's a part of me that thinks that this is combining the Illuminati idea and that idea. But there's another part of me that thinks that that's all a red herring. And all that that is, the Illuminati scene, is just one universe that Doctor Strange visits. And it's just an Illuminati like what I described Bendis came up with, which is it's like it's just an Illuminati from that world. And that's it. And so he visits them and he talks with them and he gets captured somehow, but then gets out and then moves on to like another universe where there are zombies and like another universe where yada yada, right? Like that's, I think I'm leaning more and more towards that option. And I think frankly, I would almost prefer that option just because I don't know that we need like another multiversal like police force following up on the heels of what we already got from Waldron and Loki. So in that case, the members of the Illuminati could be anything. And the big question there to me is, how is Mordo involved? And is it the same Mordo that we know, or is it a Mordo from a different universe? Like, and, you know, is like, does Stephen Strange exist in that universe where the Illuminati is? Or... is the Illuminati formed in some way, like some folks in our Slack have said, because Doctor Strange doesn't exist? Like, we've gotten that shot in the promos of, like, the statue of him and the line from Wanda. And so I think, yeah, I think that maybe that's, like, to your question and to your point, that's what they're doing and that's why they're comfortable showing that, is it's just, like they often do with these Marvel movies. Like, we're seeing stuff from the really early portions of the film that we're not seeing anything that would qualify as like the linchpin of the plot.
Wow. Wow.
Okay. We talked about the Illuminati. On that front, I also wanted to let people know on Friends from Work Plus, we have announced those readings. Like we were just saying, that includes the relevant issues, what we think are the relevant issues on the Illuminati from Bendis, includes several Hickman issues of Fantastic Four with the Council of Reeds. It also includes a really fun couple issues of the Jason Aaron, Chris Bachalo, Doctor Strange series that deals with a multiversal invasion that Doctor Strange has to kind of repel. So those are there. Also, for anyone that wants to learn about America Chavez, who is looking to be a bigger and bigger part of this movie, go check out Young Avengers, because that's where we get a really good sense of who that character is alongside Tommy and Billy, who, like we talked about, are set to appear in this film in some version. So that's kind of a fun way to do that, written by Kieran Gillen. So go check that out on the comics side. And if you want to talk about it with folks, join us over in the Comics Corner and Friends from Work Plus. A couple other things very briefly. A lot of things happened literally today, and that's the only reason we need to talk about it now instead of waiting for the follow-up episode here, because, hey, we should hit it while it's fresh. We talked about the Wakanda Forever footage screening. That's fun. Don't know anything about what it is, but it's fun. We also had the Batman sequel formally announced, Kyle, so that's fun for fans of that one. This was another really fun one. Did you see that Kevin Feige announced at CinemaCon that... he is going to be joining other Marvel creative higher-ups in an in-person creative retreat for the first time in 3 years.
Did see that.
And they're going to be planning out the next 10 years of the MCU. Let's go.
Yeah, that's great news.
That's
because it means that I have this dark fear that Kevin's eventually going to peace out for Star Wars or something, because that's like where he really wants to go next. Uh-huh. And so I'm so thankful that he's still at least shepherding 10 more years in some facet. So that's good.
Well, and just that it shows that our concerns about things maybe getting too loose are not totally founded. you know, it's nice that there's, yeah, that there's a plan in place, because I feel like that's been one of the things that Marvel's done well.
Yep. All good things, all
we
good things.
We also found out,
as Olaf would say,
back to Doctor Strange, found out that the Avatar 2 trailer is going to be premiering in front of Doctor Strange. So, you know.
Will we get to see it at our screener? I don't know, because we don't get trailers all the time.
Good question. Also, the bigger question, does anybody care?
Oh, no. You can't say that.
I'm sorry. I know there. We probably have listeners that are fans. I just, man, that one's baffling to me. Like maybe in 10 years, people will be like, "How is Endgame like the biggest movie in the world?" But I don't think so. I think people will understand whether they like it or not. I think they'll understand. Avatar is one where I think a lot of people don't understand how the live action remake of Fern Gully became the biggest film of all time. But,
oh my goodness. Just shots fired. Avatar's catching strays from friends from work here. Just all over the place.
Oh.
I'm only laughing because this is the one thing I don't have a super hot take on. So I love that you do. I think Avatar's fine.
Sure.
It's not the butt of a joke. It's not terrible. But it's amazing.
It's not terrible.
But I love that you're passionate.
It's just not like it's record holding good, you know.
I know. But I haven't heard you talk like that in a while. I just got some fire reinvigorated in me.
Well, talking about Doctor Strange in the theaters, that's my final thing here. So far, there are $42 million in ticket pre-sales already for Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. Mm-hmm. And the box office projections are looking to be somewhere around 190 to 210 million domestic just for opening weekend, which is a lot for a Doctor Strange movie. Like, we talked about Avengers and Spider-Man, but it's Doctor Strange. Like, that's not a...
No.
You know what I mean?
No. No. It's Wanda Maximoff, baby. The power of Wanda is driving this thing, and you got to get on board. Okay?
They're coming to see the WandaVision sequel.
Absolutely they are. I'm only half kidding, by the way. WandaVision, even for us, culturally was a whole different deal. It was like a whole different animal.
Even on our podcast level.
I read this fun article that I don't have time to get into right now, but it was a writer talking about something you would have liked. It was actually entitled Marvel is Saving Cinema. You know, because typically people are saying like, well, no one goes to other movies because they're only going to Marvel movies. But the argument kind of was, if you didn't have Marvel movies, would we even have theaters at this point anymore? Like, they're the ones keeping these things open.
No, absolutely. I've wondered the same thing. So it's nice to see that out there. And this is proof.
Wow.
I know.
There's so much going on. All of this on a Moon Knight episode 5 episode. That's how much is going on. And this is a perfect kickoff to Moon Knight / Doctor Strange Mega Week.
Right.
Because we're going to have this today, a little Doctor Strange chatter, and then our initial reactions to Moon Knight episode 5. We've only seen it once. It wrecked us emotionally. So we want to give you those first. Then on Monday, guys, there's going to be a special bonus episode, which we haven't done in a while. And that's going to be our leftovers to this episode. There's going to be things that we need to see again, questions we need to bring up, things that we heard from you guys on social media and on the Slack. And so that's going to go in there. But also, we're getting a chance to talk with one of the cinematographers from Moon Knight and the composer from Moon Knight. So all of that is going to be in a bonus episode on Monday, which is amazing. Then I fly to Austin on Monday. I'm going to be joining you and watching Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness on Monday night. We're going to give Marvel our comments, tell them what we think. You and I are going to freak out, and we're going to record till midnight on Monday. That's almost a certainty. And we're going to do our entire initial reactions to Doctor Strange 2. I fly home on Tuesday. Sometime on Tuesday or Wednesday, we may try to get some kind of spoiler-free preview out to you guys. for Doctor Strange, whether that be on social media or a bonus episode or something, so you can get our reaction in that way. And then Wednesday, the finale of Moon Knight airs. So we will be giving you our initial reactions to the finale on Wednesday. Okay? We'll try to rush that out probably Wednesday evening. Then Thursday, I am rewatching Doctor Strange with my wife, which will allow me to start reflecting on that. And that's going to lead to a few more Comics Corner episodes from you and Candace, probably the week after, and a reflection episode on Doctor Strange 2, and a reflection episode on the Moon Knight finale. Holy cow. That's all what's coming to you in the next 10 days or so. And then once all of that happens, we'll pick up the pieces, figure it all out, and relaunch for our May slate, which is going to be unbelievable. So get your minds right, get ready, get into Moon Knight mode, get into Doctor Strange mode, do all the catch-up you need. Go listen to our previous Moon Knight episodes. Listen to our previous Doctor Strange episode if you need to. Get your minds right for a massive, massive week. Holy cow. All right, it's time. And before we dive into Moon Knight, let me remind you about our friends at Epic Hero Shop. They're an incredible, incredible merch company for nerd merch. If you like Star Wars, DC, Marvel, any of these things we're talking about right now, go to epicheroshop.com and use our promo code, FRIENDSFROMWORK, to save 15% off any of their merchandise other than their latest Obsession line. And let me tell you, as someone who personally has quite a few of their items at this point, they have a lot of great stuff that's comfortable. It looks cool. I have a Moon Knight hoodie. I have a Loki TVA shirt. We have seen some of our listeners buy mugs, buy koozies, etc. And we're just on the doorstep of them announcing some really cool Doctor Strange and some cool summer collection shirts that are coming out soon. We'll tell you about them as soon as we can, but make sure you check out our friends at epicheroshop.com. They make great stuff and they're run by great people. Use our promo code FRIENDSFROMWORK. Okay, Robbie, here we go. Moon Knight episode 5. And so, like I said, Robbie, this is going to be a little bit of a different episode because I want to focus on just what was your initial takeaway to this. And we will be doing a follow-up episode to this one specifically on Monday. So no pressure if you miss something today. All right.
Wow. Thank you for that. Moon Knight episode 5, titled Asylum, directed again by Mohamed Diab, written by Rebecca Kirsch and Matthew Orton. We have, once again, largely the same kind of core cast returning. This is not one that we've had a huge cast on. It's mostly Oscar Isaac and Ethan Hawke here. A little bit of F. Murray Abraham and the introduction of Mark Spector's / Stephen Grant's, maybe kind of sort of, parents, Wendy Spector and Elias Spector. And they are portrayed by Fernanda Andrada and Ray Lucas. We should also note that we get a couple of very great child actor performances here, Kyle, as young Mark and young Steven.
Wow.
And we have to note that because we always get crap. And also just worth mentioning for now, we had Gregory Middleton as the cinematographer here, doing some great work, and that's going to be fun because we're going to be talking to him next episode when we come back and reflect some on episode 5. But for now, let's dive into it.
Okay, like I mentioned earlier, I don't have very many notes, and I don't think you have any. You texted me. And it's because I did have my notebook out. I don't love to take notes on the first time I view it, but I knew I might only get a chance to see it once before we were recording this. So I did take my notebook out, but then, man, the episode bounced around so much. I was still so confused on what was happening. So as I was having revelations of how they were putting it together, it was getting hard to keep up with notes.
Right.
So this is mainly just me, how I felt after I turned it off, which is, man, to me and to Annika, this is one of those day ruiner episodes. Am I crazy? Like, it was so well done, but this was an episode that just sticks with you.
Hmm.
Like, you feel weird an hour later and you're like, mm-hmm. why do I feel that weird? It's just so sad. So sad for Mark. I mean, to have that traumatic of a background, lose your brother, get blamed by your mother, and then your mother turns crazy and abusive. Just really dark, really sad. And then really, really sad for Steven to put it together that he's not the original host, that he's only part of this one person, and then ultimately to sacrifice himself if that's the last we see of him. Just really sad. Really sad.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I watched this right when I woke up this morning, and I'm with you. What a way to start your day.
Exactly. Here you go, Robbie. Go to work and have a great, beautiful day today.
Man. Did it
affect you like it affected me, or do you need a rewatch? Because I was like choked up legitimately for most of it.
It affected me for sure. I mean, I will say, like, I really do wish that I could watch these in a different context. Like, it is rough having to watch it on the rush out to work sometimes, because I feel like you can't fully sit in it the way that, and which is one of the reasons why I think a rewatch works so well for me often.
That's why we're doing this for Monday as well, by the way.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But no, 100%. I mean, it was gutting. I mean, I thought that's why I don't, any complaints about a lack of action or anything like that. Like, yeah, but
it just didn't matter.
Yeah, exactly.
As I'm watching, I'm like, this just doesn't matter anymore.
And I mean, it's so well done. It's so comic accurate for the people that care about that kind of stuff. I mean, in a lot of ways, like, not everything. But, you know, one thing I wanted to point out, which is not a straight emotional reaction, but I think maybe just something to learn in general. There was a lot of controversy, not a lot of, I always have to specify this with Candace. I'm like, hey, there's controversy. And she's like, really? I haven't seen it. I'm like, no, it's controversy within the like 10 people that talk about Marvel on Twitter. But within that bubble, there was controversy about Mark Spector, in the show, or at least Stephen Grant, not being Jewish, because that's become a part of that character's identity in the comics. And now we find out that Mark is Jewish, right? And it just made me think, like, man, it's so silly. Like they were interviewing the creators of Moon Knight leading up to the show, being like, what do you think about the fact that they decided to not make him Jewish? And it's just so, it's crazy the stuff that we get hung up on, because like, here it is, like a Shiva, you know? And it's like, I think that it's just, it's funny that we will like, there will be these news cycles and we go on these rabbit trails instead of just letting the story unfurl and then, you know, choose to kind of examine it. Because I thought that the way that we learn about Mark's background in a way that's very kind of comic accurate was still really moving and surprising in certain ways. And like the little brother thing is something that is not part of the comic backstory. And that obviously was kind of the heartbeat of this. And that's a great example, I thought, of the way that Marvel could go in and take something like the Bushman stuff, the mercenary stuff, like the DID presentation, all of that is familiar, but then inject this whole new element in a way that just like breaks it open. And yeah, man, I mean, like, that was brutal, some of those scenes with his mom.
Yeah. So the brother thing was a great twist, I thought. As soon as I saw that, I was like, oh no.
Uh-huh.
Steven's his version of his brother, almost, you know, that he didn't have, kind of,
right,
that he's going to replicate.
The fish with one fin.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and then the mom stuff was just really brutal. Yeah, it was really traumatic. That's literally what I wrote. Horribly traumatic. This is a fascinating tidbit. So my brother is somewhat of an expert in mental health. He's a social worker that specifically works with mental illness patients. And my wife was like, dude, you need to have Chris on, which you guys would all love because he is literally my opposite. You could not find, he's my best friend. He's my best friend. He's exactly the opposite. He's not into this Marvel stuff. He hardly talks. He shows no, like you can't get him ramped up or depressed. Like he's just so even keel with everything. He's literally the opposite. And I think that's why we work so well. He loves my energy. I love his calmness. But he's the perfect person to work with mental health patients. But it was, anyways, my wife was like, you need to have him on the podcast to talk about people with DID in real life. And maybe that will shine a light on kind of where they're going with this. And we missed the chance to do that because now they flesh so much of that out here. But I thought it was really interesting that I think according to what he was saying, a lot of the stuff he was telling me came true. He was saying a lot of times DID patients come from severe trauma, which we hadn't really had any major indication in the story until this point that that's what had happened, you know? Maybe a few hints, but nothing like this. Although we had talked about maybe his mother being dead. We predicted that, which was just such a sad thing. Oh my goodness, that scene on the street. We'll get to it in 1 second. But then also that ultimately as like a coping mechanism, there's lots of different ways. Like a lot of times these people don't get rid of the other personality. That's not the host. They just learn to deal with it or they learn to adopt a less problematic or violent personality, right? Like that's the one they stick with kind of thing. And I just thought that kind of foreshadowed a little bit what happened here with Steven, right? Like Steven realizes this. It's really depressing for us because we know Steven as a separate human being now. You know what I'm saying? Like he's not,
right?
But that's how we see him. But if this is the end of Steven, it seems to kind of be going in line with Mark made peace with that part of him and was able to let that go. You know what I'm saying? Like, hence balancing the scales.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was all interesting. That's a tangent. But we were kind of wondering how they would handle that and where it would go. And I still don't think we have the final answer yet. Because I think there's a chance that you still see Steven again. But if that was Mark accepting his past and kind of putting Steven to rest, then I thought it was moving and well done and sad and traumatic and all of it.
Yeah, I'm a little torn on that, I think, because part of me thinks, like, surely that can't be the end of Steven.
But you got to remember, it's still Mark. They're one person.
Right, right.
Steven was basically his version of coping with that pain.
Right.
And so in a way, him embracing that pain would be letting go of Steven, right? Even though we as an audience are attached to that character because it feels like a different person.
Right, which is in and of itself like a really, that's true. Like that's a really well executed way of showing that, right? Because he's dealing with that stuff like emotionally and mentally, and we still don't really know what role the ship has in this. Like if that's him imagining that, is he on his deathbed and this is all stuff that's happening in his head? Is he actually in purgatory sort of? And, you know, these are all the questions I've kind of seen swirling around today. But maybe it's like, yes, and, you know, it's all kind of happening on some level. And even though we saw it as Mark and Steven talking through that on some level and Steven kind of understanding Mark and why he had to create this other personality, maybe like...
Oh, that scene in the room? Oh my gosh, I know, that man. Was horrifying to watch.
But it's interesting, like we saw that and then we see them come back to the ship and be sort of united and then Steven falls over, but maybe that's all kind of happening simultaneously and that's all like one manifestation of Mark letting Steven go. Now, I think that there's another part of me that thinks Steven will come back and it's more Mark embracing Steven, not as a coping mechanism, but as, you know, another part of himself that can only really be expressed in that way. And I think if I had to put money down, that's where I would go. But I will say there's a little part of me that, you know, it's like what we've talked about from almost the beginning, you know, talking about starting the podcast in 2019. I think one of the first episodes that we ever had was you know, Marvel should maybe be a little bit more comfortable with saying goodbye to characters. And I think this is a really great example of, like, do I want Steven to come back? Absolutely. Would it be more emotionally resonant if he doesn't? Maybe.
I want to actually say one other disclaimer here. I'm feeling this for some reason. I know this is a show, right? It's a TV show. It's for entertainment. It's for escapism. And it's for a lot of things. And it can bring people together, et cetera. And so I'm not trying to make something heavier where it's not supposed to be, et cetera. But I could see how this episode would be a trigger for some people. Am I crazy? Like, I feel like this could have been a hard watch for people that have had a similar past or are struggling with similar things or whatever. And so I hear you on that, and I feel you. And that's why I'm saying, like, this is one of those that bothered me. Like, these kind of things bother me more than just straight violence or gore or whatever. You know, like, this, this sits with you because it's so disturbing about this person you like, even though it's a character in a show. And so if that's you, you can reach out to us. Like, we're here to talk with you. I feel for you. And yeah, I just wanted to say that really quick because I do feel like this is a pretty heavy topic before I move into some of the plot things.
Yeah. Well, and I'm glad you said that. And I would also say, like, I thought for me, that's what made the moment when Steven tells Mark that it wasn't his fault so powerful.
He's so powerful. That's the scene in the street I was referencing.
Yeah. Just, I mean, I'm not normally the one that gets chills, but I'm getting chills because I think there's something about not just that conversation, but being able to have that conversation with yourself. Where if you have that kind of trauma, but if you have any kind of trauma, like, I mean, I get why Oscar Isaac wanted this role, and I get now more and more the way that he's talked about and the way they talked about it in the press conference. Like, this is this was a heavy undertaking, you know, and what they were trying to do. And that means, like, when you swing like this, when you go bold, we always talk about big swings in terms of weirdness, which this show has done. Mm-hmm. But in some ways, it's an even bigger swing to try to tackle something like this without doing it injustice, you know, and like not doing it sensibly and sensitively. And so I think that, like, that, man, I just thought that moment was so powerful and clearly born out of some level of empathy and understanding from the creators behind that. And on that level, I just think, like, what a powerful thing that they put together here.
There are so many parallels here to WandaVision, which is a great thing because WandaVision is my favorite Disney Plus show. And that's one of the reasons why this show is rapidly climbing my Disney Plus rankings. Obviously, we talked about how WandaVision Episode 8 is a journey back through Wanda's past in a very moving, gut-wrenching way about the trauma she's gone through. And this now being the pre-finale being the same way. And another way, this show in so many ways doesn't feel like a superhero show. Just like in a lot of ways, WandaVision didn't either. But then at the same time, they're riding this really fine line of, yes, they're going through this crazy, trippy journey through Mark and Steven's trauma, but they're also then bouncing back between this mythological boat going through the Egyptian underworld to the afterlife, which is very like sci-fi-y fantasy superhero. So it's like they're riding that line, just like WandaVision did, you know, where it's like
with the talking hippo.
It's not about a superhero, but then they're like, they'll do something where Vision has power still, or Wanda does, or, you know, you're like, oh yeah, it's a superhero thing too. And I think that's genius. Like, I don't think they could do that with every character, but I love how well that's working here for both those two shows. I was thinking about that because you were bringing up why Oscar Isaac liked this role. And I was thinking, like, in some ways, it's not a superhero show at all. Like, at all. It is truly a case study to the people who point out that he hasn't been in the Moon Knight outfit very often. That's true. He really hasn't. So in that way, it's not. But then at the same time, in the same episode they're doing that healing, they're doing it on a mythological ship. You know what I mean? So what a wild trip it's been thus far, honestly.
I'm so happy to be able to say, I say I'm so happy after we're talking about that. I think I said last week, who knows what episode 5 and episode 6 will be, but right now this is a contender for top Disney Plus show. Man, like, right now, this is, this is up there for me. Like, I think depending on how next week goes, this might dethrone WandaVision for me. And that's not me being prisoner of the moment, I don't think. I just think in terms of, like, consistency across the board, with them knowing exactly what they've wanted to do with the time that they have, and I really think, like, there are people talking about how they'll be able to land this plane in the sixth episode, and that's just not a huge worry for me right now. Like, this has felt kind of unique in that, like, with Falcon Winter Soldier, Hawkeye, WandaVision, there were all these, like, who is Sharon? What's going on with, like, S.W.O.R.D.? What's going to be the Kingpin Echo situation? And we all felt like on some level there were parts of those that maybe weren't resolved as fully as they could have been. Now, did they, like, tank the finale? I don't think so. But I think that those are parts of the issues people have had. I think that one of the things that Moon Knight's done super, super well is it's kept it pretty darn contained to Steven / Mark, Harrow, and Layla. Like, that's kind of what we care about here. And I love that. I'm not saying everything has to be that, but I love that.
Okay. I've only seen this one time, so I just want to ask you a bunch of plot questions that we may not have the answers to today. And then I'll hopefully follow up on some of these things on Monday, right? So I'm going to set up some of the things I'm wondering, and we'll see if by Monday any more of that's clear. And if not, it will definitely be clear by next Wednesday.
Okay? Well, and people can chime in and maybe give us their takes, which will be a fun,
that's what I
a
mean.
Fun way to, yeah, to do that.
And I want some more time to read some of those to see things that I missed. Okay. So give me some grace on these. Let's just trace what's actually happening here. And by the way, the big gist of this conversation is what is actually happening in this counseling session with Harrow? I can't put my finger on where this is actually taking place, or is it actually taking place? Can you? And let me put it this way first. So we now know in real life, in the tangible 616 Marvel Universe that we're watching in the MCU, that Mark was a child. He was abused, and out of trauma, he came up with these other personalities, or maybe just one, okay? Then he grows up, and Mark does become a mercenary. He does then get into a fight with people at the archaeological dig with Layla's father. He tries to save those people in that he gets shot. He falls at the foot of Khonshu's statue / tomb, which, by the way, shout out comics, exactly what you said would happen. As he's dying, Khonshu saves his life by reviving him, but in that is manipulating him to do his work. So then that Mark goes on to be the Moon Knight. He is controlled by Khonshu. This is all real and tangible. We saw that. Then that version of Mark gets shot. When he gets shot, do we still have answers where he's going? Because is the afterlife, the purgatory, the Egyptian afterlife that we kind of talked about, is that where the counseling is taking place with Harrow? And why is it Harrow in the afterlife?
Yeah.
Like, where is that actually happening? Because as he was going through all these memories in the field of reeds and everything, just when you thought, okay, I am dead, this is all fake, whatever, then he throws open the doors. It's the Field of Reeds. And then the next scene, he's back at the counseling session where Harold's saying, see, you're snapping it out of it. You didn't get shot by me. We didn't do this stuff. Like, what is actually happening with that? Like, I can't figure that out. Am I dumb, or is that where we're supposed to be?
No, I think that's where we're supposed to be. And, you know, I we talked a lot about on last episode how that pulled from the early issues of the Jeff Lemire run. Then I would just say for anybody that is sitting there and trying to make sense of some of this, I would really recommend, if you want to go read issues 10 through 14 of that run, which is the Moon Knight series that began in 2016, it is like very, very, like almost shot for shot similar in the way that it goes through the origins. Like I said, there's not the emphasis on the abusive relationship with his mom and the loss of the brother, but in terms of like the progression of him dealing with the DID and going to the army and then getting dishonorably discharged and then becoming a mercenary and like the way that all unfolds. And then the in terms of like the kind of psych ward, that does go back to the very early part of that run. So I know a lot of folks that listen are not comics readers, but for those that are interested or maybe have been thinking about it, this might be a fun way to kind of get involved here as you're waiting for the next episode and just kind of add some context. But to answer your question more directly, I do think that it's supposed to be pretty ambiguous. And that's maybe one of my like hot takes as I've been looking at some of the reactions to this episode. Like I was saying, I don't think that there's a ton of work that they're going to have to do to land this plane in episode 6. Or I say that, not on the level that people are thinking, in part because I don't think that it's going to be terribly interested in explaining any of it. One of the things that was interesting about that Lemire Smallwood run is you come away from that having really no idea what was real and what was not real. All you know is that at the end of that, Moon Knight's back. So maybe that happened. Maybe it all happened in his head. Whatever. I think that this is a little bit more grounded than that. Like, I have a feeling that, like, because of the way that they do give some exposition and explain, like, hey, this is the, like, everyone chooses a way that this appears and you're choosing a psych ward because, like Mark says, like, he thinks he's insane and maybe he pulls Dr. Harrow in from things he knows and like all the Egyptian stuff and the movie with Stephen Grant. Like, so I do think that there's going to be some level of like, yeah, he was in kind of this Egyptian purgatory and that's the way he imagined it. And then now the scales are balanced and he's out and he can come back. But I don't think that we're going to get a ton more than that in episode 6. And I almost don't think that we should, because would that make it better? You know, like if they went back in and were like, this is what was happening down there. Like, this is what was real. This is what wasn't real. Like, I think that that would in some ways like belabor it. And I feel like that what was important and what was real were the experiences that we saw brought out of Mark, particularly in those conversations with Steven. And I think that's all that we really need to know going into the next episode. And I think everything else just facilitated that.
There was one interesting line that I can't get over, though. It's when Harrow tells him that Steven was the one that checked him in to the psych hospital when he found out that his mother was dead. That's what he said, I think. So are you saying that's maybe just in his head, that he's imagining that Steven would do that?
I don't know. I mean, that's a good, there are lines like that. Yeah. Like there's also the line from the very first episode, if you remember, which I caught this on a last rewatch with Candace, but I also want to give credit. One of our listeners messaged us this on Instagram. I saw, whenever he first walks into the museum in like one of those opening scenes.
Yes.
And she asks him
foreshadowing
about being rejected from the Field of Reeds.
Yes. Foreshadowing.
Yeah, yeah, but
which just glossed over is like, haha, it's some girl knows a little bit about Egyptian history. Haha, it's a museum.
Right.
And now it's like, oh, he did get rejected by the Field of Reeds.
Yeah. I mean, and Mark wasn't, but yeah, Steven is, you know, left like frozen. And so why did she say that? Like, what is that just kind of, is that all going to be a question mark? Again, like part of me wants to prepare us for that. Because one, I think there's something to be said for not explaining every nook and cranny of something. And two, I don't want people to be like, they didn't explain this, therefore the finale is a failure, which I think some Marvel fans are want to do.
Well, just know that I'm not in that boat.
Oh, no, I know.
But I am wondering, you know, if this was a standalone show that this character never made an appearance in the MCU again, and it was just all in his head, I think that's all fine. Like, that's a really cool story to tell about how a guy dealt with this trauma, and we get a good glimpse into that kind of mental issue. And I love that. But if this is not a standalone thing and they need to bring this character into the MCU in other ways, that's fascinating, because then it can't all be in his head. Otherwise, he's not a character like we're thinking in the MCU.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's all in his head.
No.
It's just interesting that they gave so much. No, sorry. And I wasn't saying you were thinking that was. I'm saying to myself, though, because it's just kind of crazy some of the detail they gave in those conversations with. I guess they're just doing a good job, because it's making me confused on if he's crazy or not, you know? And maybe it's like I said with 10 Cloverfield Lane, where it's like it seems that it is becoming a both and. Like, he is crazy and going through stuff, but also this Khonshu stuff is happening.
Man, doesn't this episode make that moment in episode 3 even more heartbreaking, though, whenever they ask Mark if he's unwell and he says, yes, I am unwell? Like, I'm
sitting here trying to talk about the episode, and I just can't stop thinking about how depressing it is in the street when he breaks down in front of Steven, and then Steven has that healing with him. I that's just all I'm thinking about. Like, everything else, I'm like, okay, but I'm like, I'm sitting here living
in a household where Candace hasn't even seen episode 4 yet, so I'm like, I haven't been able to talk about any of it out loud, which she just left town. So I'm like, it's such a,
I think Candace is going to love this because she liked this part of the comics
for sure.
And she likes Oscar Isaac, and this is Oscar Isaac at his peak, basically.
Dude. I mean, so one thing you said a second ago that I think is interesting kind of from the comics perspective, and I should say, like, I had not really read many Moon Knight comics at all before I started. So I don't want people to think that I'm some Moon Knight expert. But, you know, having read stuff where he's appeared a good bit prior to this, and having read some of the stuff, it's not always a focus on his DID. Like, that is not, like, that is a core part of the character, but it is not the only part of the character. And to the extent that is a big part, it manifests in different ways. So, like, sometimes you see him show up and it's never even really mentioned because, like, that there's just not time, and that doesn't need to be the focus. And sometimes, like in the Bendis Maleev run, it manifests totally differently in this kind of fun way where, like, instead of it being Mark, Steven, and Grant, it's Mark, and then he creates new identities that are Wolverine, Captain America, and Spider-Man, because he's just moved to LA and he's trying to be like the superhero for LA that they are for New York. And so he's created these personalities that are what he thinks of as, like, the best superheroes. So, like, to your question about what it would look like moving forward with how he integrates to the MCU, what I love is that it could kind of look like anything. Like, it could be super Egyptian influenced all the way down. This could be all that we get of the Egyptian influence. It could be like DID in every version we get, where that's a really big part of the character, or that could be kind of sidelined during certain stories. And I think that makes for just a ton of really kind of fascinating potential. And it kind of makes me go back to, like, yeah, I get why whenever they were talking about this being such a monumental entry, why they feel like this could go so many places, because it's such a powerful character. We're so connected to it. I mean, we talked about how long, like, we liked Wanda, but Wanda had appeared in several projects before we felt like we got the moment to know her the way that we did in WandaVision. And part of the reason that I think, like, Iron Man worked so well is that it was such a brilliant reflection on that character that Downey gave us. So I think, yeah, like, it's just, I'm genuinely excited to see where they go. The question I'll ask you out of all of that, that I've also kind of seen floating around, do you think that there is any legitimate chance that this is it for Moon Knight and that we don't see anything else? And this was like a mini series, one and done, that's all we get.
Would be a crazy rug pulling thing, but also I haven't thought about that. I'm just processing as you said that. Could actually be one of the coolest things ever if they did that actually and just kept it isolated. I think I'd be sad I didn't get to see more of how Mark fit in with some of those other people we've talked about. But, it would be really bold. It'd be really bold and artistic, and I could get behind that.
Right.
As just a movie guy and not someone who's tied to need, the comics to where I need to see more stories,
Right.
But, I go either way.
I think I would be sad to lose out on Oscar Isaac in the MCU more than anything, because it's just been whenever I say breath of fresh air, I always feel like I'm not saying that things have gotten stale, but it's just it's new energy that I love that's different from what we've had. And I would be sad to lose that, but I'm with you.
It kind of would be like Inception to me, right? Where it's like, it's my favorite movie of all time. I really, really, really want to see a follow-up, but I also really, really don't want to see a follow-up. Like, the beauty of it is it was what it was, and that was it.
Right.
And so part of me is like, artistically, it'd be incredibly bold to just have it be the 6 episodes, boom, that's it.
Right.
And then the other part of me is like, but they could tell so many fun stories with this character, Oscar Isaac. I haven't seen enough Suit. Like, there's a lot of places they could go. I want to see him interact with the Avengers, et cetera. So, yeah.
I do think that one thing that's been really effective here, I was talking to a friend of mine about this when I was in Nashville, is how little it's tied into the MCU so far. Like, I saw some folks saying today, we've really gotten, the only references we've gotten have been Easter eggs, and you kind of have to be on the lookout for them. Like, we talked about the GRC, we got the ancestral plane reference in this.
We did.
In this episode.
Yes, wow, did not see that coming.
And which also like opens up an interesting conversation about like the nature of the afterlife in the MCU, which I kind of, it's fun that it's kind of varied and seemingly like dependent on, beliefs and perspectives. But I think that has been a big strength of this for a lot of people. Like, I was talking to a friend that has actually followed everything, but he was just talking about how like he's been able to really easily recommend this show to people without feeling like he had to do a ton of intro or disclaimers. Sure. We follow this thing. We love the continuity. We love that it's a big expanding universe. But yeah, I think there's there's something to be said for letting it be its own thing. And if it finished off as its own thing, that is kind of cool.
Okay. Just some more things here. I got more stuff. my first note of the entire episode was, oh my goodness, he didn't even run out of the room. And what I mean by that is the very beginning of this episode is a twist in and of itself, because we left the last episode with him panicking, fighting off those wardens, and then running into the hippo goddess, etc. But then the massive twist of this episode, he's right back in with Hera, to where you're immediately confused again of,
right.
Oh, so he never even left the room. But then it goes back and forth to where it's like, wait, is he leaving the room? Is that in his
right.
head?
Like right.
a meta thing? The second thing is, and I haven't seen a lot of this online, and so I could be so wrong on this, okay? Here we go. I think one of the big bombshells was there wasn't a obvious third personality reference in this, right? Like, so we had seen that sarcophagus, and maybe now we're led to believe that what was rumbling in there was just past memories or unfulfilled communication or something, but we didn't get to see, like, I was pretty sure we were going to see an obvious third right. personality, and that's where everyone's at. But dude, talk me off a ledge. And I watched the scene twice. I rewinded. We saw somebody different for a second there. Do you know what I'm talking about? Okay. No. So you don't.
Well, I had I thought that at one point, but then it got deep. Like, I thought, my initial thought was whenever Steven was like, do you remember that? And it was the scene with him standing by the car. Because, like, sure. Jake is a cab driver in the comics, I thought okay. that was, like, some kind of shout-out to Jake for a second because Mark acted really weird. But then we find right. out that that was the scene with the outside the Shiva. Right. So that, yeah.
Okay. So let me backpedal. Let me back up. That's not what I'm talking about, which I love. And again, I'm at this point, this idea or this theory is way in the minority now because I feel like if they were going to bring up a third personality, they would have done it here. Like this was the time to do it. And even until the end of the episode, I was thinking, oh, the reason the scales aren't balanced is because there's another person, right?
That's
they need
what
to get
I was
the
thinking
third
too.
Heart.
Yeah.
Okay. But right at the beginning of the episode, when he's back talking to Harrow and he's like kind of like stone cold, sedated, clearly Mark. He's clearly Mark.
Uh-huh.
When he starts putting it together and he gets really aggressive with the weapon in his hand, go back and watch that. I feel like Oscar Isaac is intentionally, I have chills. I'm so wrong on this probably, but he's intentionally acting different. I thought, oh my gosh, we're seeing Jake. He has like a Boston accent. I can't see that is not intentional. When he starts standing up, he's okay. like, you know, Doc, I feel like a million bucks, Doc. And he starts like getting aggressive and standing up. I have chills right now. And he grabs the like diamond pyramid to smash his head. And he's talking like somebody from Boston. That is not what Marcus sounded like. I'm going to die on this hill. I could be so wrong. In fact, I think I'm wrong because I think they would have done Jake now. But what was that? I don't think
now
that was
Mark.
Now
that you say that.
It clearly wasn't Steven. Yeah. And it clearly was not Mark's voice. I think that's a third.
Now that you say that, that's that. I remember having the same thought, and then they didn't do anything with it, so I kind of forgot about it. But there were a couple moments like that.
I know, they didn't do anything.
Yeah. Like,
well, so I wrote down in my notes at that moment, third personality, exclamation point.
Yeah.
That's how much it hit me. But then they never followed up, so I'm like, wow, maybe that was just Mark being weird.
I'm so glad you raised that, because, yeah, I mean, you could be totally wrong, because there was never any follow-up, but I thought it there. I also thought that... Like, and I want to talk about this, and this is probably something we can talk about more in the next episode. There was a second where I thought that the moment when he was watching his mother Shiva was going to be the birth of the third personality. And so whenever it was Steven, I was like, oh, and then he was like, yeah, this is when our lives merged. And that makes sense on its own, but there were several moments where I was like, cause what I thought was that was a foreshadowing of it with Harrow. And then it was going to come back, but that's not what happened. Obviously.
Again, with the parallels to WandaVision, this could go one of two ways. Either we're going to watch the finale in 6 days and it's going to be a thing where you say that was this version's Mephisto. Where it's like, we talked about Jake, we talked about this third personality. We knew that was a possibility from the comics, and they decided not to do it. Kind of like how Paul Bettany teased that cameo that never existed because it was himself and it's funny, ha ha ha.
Right.
Like, this could be that version like WandaVision.
The difference being, this is an actual part of the comics, whereas Mephisto was like entirely something that people came up with like out of nowhere. Okay.
Right. But 80% of me thinks that's the case, that nothing's going to happen. But the other thing is like 20% of me thinks there's a chance that next week I'm going to look like a genius for catching this. And that
I mean, I've always thought
one of the final twists, one of the final twists is that there is a third personality. So I don't know. It's going to go one of both ways. I know I'm repeating myself, but please go back to that scene, and I will before Monday. We'll reflect on this on Monday before we see the finale. But I swear to you, it was an intentionally different accent and like facial expression. Like that wasn't Mark. I don't know. He literally says, yeah, that's what they pay you for, Doc, right? 100 million bucks, huh? I feel like a million bucks, Doc. I'll tell you that. And he's like, as he's like rising up, getting the weapon. I don't know. I could be so wrong. So we'll move on. But watch it again, please.
I also thought in terms of stuff that felt like kind of jarring to me, the moment, and it may be the moment that led into that, whenever he's trying to get Steven to stop talking and he suddenly starts like shaking his head and he's like, no. Like that felt not Mark to me. And I know that could just be because it's so tender and it's such a traumatic thing.
It's so much trauma that's being triggered that maybe that's what happened to him.
Right, like he's reverting to almost like a childlike thing.
Right, but we didn't even see him do that as a kid, to your point, Mark.
Right, yeah, true.
Like Mark pretty calmly turned
transitioned.
Into Steven. Yeah. So yeah, that also stood out. Which, by the way, that was in the trailer. That shot.
True. Yeah, I thought that too. Yeah, I was like, oh, there it is.
So TBD. We'll see next week if that's going to be a part of the story or not. Maybe it was all a red herring, and there's a total chance of that. And I don't want people to get psyched up for something that's not there. Or maybe I called the shot, and you guys can all praise me next week. When next
shot
week
caller.
Also, on that ship with the Egyptian goddess, did I catch that Harrow is already achieving his mission of throwing souls down to the underworld that didn't deserve to be there? Or was that the people we've already seen him judging? Or is that Ahmet is already being unleashed? And that's the beginning of it.
I took it as some version of the second, like some combination of the second two.
Like Harrow's already working on the Ahmet thing. It's working.
I think it's working, but I don't think it's been unleashed. Like I don't think it's like they've completed their plan, but it's either like that's the manifestation of the people we've seen him kill, or he's starting to, I mean, we don't even know how he's going to implement that, right? Like what it looks like for him to free Ahmet. Do we?
No, because on that note, we don't know what it looks like to free Khonshu, which is where they were headed.
Yeah, true.
Correct. Out of necessity to revive him. And that was another point I had. The actual scene at Khonshu's tomb chills, dude. Oh my goodness. Sad because of how he's being manipulated, but also so dope with how that was visualized of him dying at the footstep of that statue. And the voice there felt so natural because you didn't see the Khonshu we were seeing. I just thought it was cool to see just the statue and hear the voice. But then when he finally accepts it and gets like... I was going to say rez because I've been playing too much Call of Duty Warzone, which is short for revived. So he's rezzing. But he's revived. Wow, meta nerd joke.
Wow, love that. By the way, if people don't know, Kyle is like absurdly, insanely good at Call of Duty Warzone. So that's a big part of Kyle's life that you may not know about. But if you are also into Warzone, you should message us because... you should, I'm signing you up for that. I know you may not have any room in your Warzone crew, Kyle.
I would love to play with people. I'm below average at a lot of things in life. Warzone is not one of those things. So hit me up. And by the way, some of our listeners are streamers. I know Justin is, and I've tried to hook up with him before. So
nice.
Small thing. Anyways, when he gets revived at the foot of the statue, holy cow, that suit up was dope. From death
it was the
life,
coolest.
Basically.
It was the coolest so far, I thought.
Yes.
I also, like, one thing I really loved was having Steven's perspective there. Like, one of the things I think is so genius about the show is it's not like, oh, Mark's the cool guy that has it all figured out and Steven's the bumbling idiot. Like, that's how it kind of starts. But you start to realize, like we talked about in episode 3 and 4, there are things that Steven knows that Mark doesn't. Like, there are actual strengths that he has that are necessary. And part of that is, like, an emotional intelligence and maturity to where whenever he's present for these moments with Mark, whether we're talking about his childhood moments or talking about his moments with Khonshu, his first moments, Steven's able to be like, hey, he was manipulating you from the very beginning. Like, I see that, and that's so sad, and it's not your fault, and I don't blame you because you were literally at death's door, but, like, look, like, I can see it, and that starts to show you, if Steven does come back, what that relationship could look like in, like, a functioning, symbiotic situation.
Totally. You're 100% correct, but I just want to add that I think I'm becoming more and more okay with the idea that Steven's not coming back and that Steven is this representation of the pain and the healing. And so it's not so much that I'm going to miss Steven. It's that he's letting Steven go. He's letting that pain go after the healing that Steven brought to him. Because Steven now was the vehicle of healing for him and Layla's relationship potentially when he wakes up, right? Now he's going to know how to communicate because of Steven. And he's going to learn that he can't just keep all that pain away. And Steven was the healing for his own personal trauma with his mother and his brother, and that it wasn't his fault. And Steven brought that, right? And then Steven was ultimately the healing he needed on the ship physically when realizing that we are the same person. It's just me over here. And so I'm kind of liking that more and more. And I'm needing Steven to be around less and less, if that makes sense. Not because I don't like Steven, but because it's Mark becoming whole. That's where I'm at with it.
Yeah, man, I can really go either way. Like, there's a part of me where I think it would be really beautiful to have a situation where Mark and Steven are willing to, where they can just live in a way where it's like, hey, now you take the body and you take the body. You know, it feels like this like harmonious thing. But I also see what you're saying, and yeah, I think that would be powerful.
Right, and by the way, I missed, Steven's also the healing now with Khonshu, it seems, because it seems like Steven really made it clear, like you said, that he was manipulating him, and I think if they bring Khonshu back, it's going to be with a different mindset from Mark, you know what I mean? Like, he's now aware of this.
Right. Wow, yeah. No, that's a good point.
Wow. So for me, this is back-to-back let's freaking goes, and I don't give those out, but this is not a down step from last episode for me.
No.
It emotionally connected with me in a way that WandaVision episode 8 has. Honestly, of all the Disney Plus shows, it emotionally connected with me in the way that only WandaVision episode 8 has as well.
Yeah.
So that puts it in top territory for me. So it's Let's Freaking Go. And I'm really, really excited to reflect on this on Monday.
I am too. I am waiting for the day, which will come when you and I have different grades. But you know, I'm right there with you. It's a let's freaking go. I don't know. It could not be. It's such a different thing, and that's what we already talked about at the top from episode 4. Like, they're let's freaking go in dramatically different ways. But yeah, like I would love for episode 6 to be that. Hey, maybe it's a streak. Maybe we're wrong. Maybe every episode of a show and movie from here on out is let's freaking go. And I would be the happiest camper in the world. But yeah, I mean, these two have just been like legitimately, in all seriousness, top tier television, I think.
For me, this show through 3.5 episodes was really, really fun and cool. And I would have been like, hey, it's a really fun archaeological Egyptian exploration thriller. And it's been really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But it took a massive step with the trippy ending of episode 4. And only continuing that here helps its case, I think. We just went from like, oh, it's a fun show, to, oh my goodness, what is happening? And we're dealing with way bigger things. So it stepped up at that point to me. Let's reflect on this on Monday. Here's a special surprise, guys. If you have made it this far, we've been excited to do this. We have one large Moon Knight, Mr. Knight hoodie from our friends at Epic Hero Shop. And we have one medium Moon Knight, Mr. Knight hoodie from Epic Hero Shop that we want to give away to anyone who has made it thus far. And so here's what you need to do. If you are a large or a medium, go to the ffwpodcast.com, click on contact, and send us a message with this code word. The code word is Osiris, like the gates they're arriving at the end. So if you message us Osiris and you are a size large or a size medium, you'll be entered to win one of these two Moon Knight hoodies. Osiris is the code word. So fun.
Wow.
We are just getting started with Moon Knight and Doctor Strange. Epic mega week. This is going to be a mega week to end all mega weeks. We will see you guys again on Monday with more reflection on this and with a chance to talk to two of the creators from this incredible television show. And then by the time you are hearing that on Monday, Robbie and I will be gloriously partaking in our glorious purpose, which is watching Doctor Strange 2 in the Multiverse of Madness.
we'll be lost in the Multiverse of Madness.
We will be lost, and you will find us back on the podcast previewing that nice. And more things there. Thank you guys so much. Like we said, we're so pumped about the million plays. We're so pumped that every single one of you out there has made us a part of your day and part of your routine of life, and we love that. Please spread the word. Rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or follow us on Spotify. And check us out on social media at the FFW Podcast. Stay in touch with us. We love to chat with you. Join the Slack. Go to our website. Hit us up there. Let's stay in touch and let's get through this Moon Knight trauma together. We'll see you on the other side next time on Friends from Work.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90 exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.